Welcome to Openly Gamer Theater's production of The Dragon Variation, a Shadowrun roleplay drama.
This is Shannon. I'm playing Nightfall.
This is Dan, and I'm playing Fastback.
This is Mike. I will be playing Frenzy.
This is Brandon. I'm playing Talisman.
This is Brandy. I'm playing Poison Lily.
This is Jason, and I'm playing Astral Glide.
I'm Sean, and I'm playing Blockade.
Be warned, the following content may not be suitable for all audiences. Talisman looked at the folded paper in his hand again. 2C. It didn't take a genius to piece together what was going on. He'd seen it all before. How the hell did Matt do it? He shit all over women, and they threw themselves at him. The more he did it, the more they wanted him. What'd he always say? Treat the whore like a princess, and the princess like a whore? Talisman smiled. Glide handed him the note, and then disappeared up the steps. Then Lily gets a text message and storms after him. Her irritation seemed legit, but he knew it was an act. He also knew exactly what Glide meant by giving him the note. So Talisman sat on the top step, giving them plenty of time to get past all the tedious bits. Foreplay fighting. That's what Matt called it. He and Lily would yell at each other for a while, then give in. He pushed the button on the top of his comlink, activating his AR window, so he could check the time. He'd give them about 10 more minutes, and then slip in the door. Glide would have left it unlocked for him. He ignored the strange look he got from a couple of off-duty security officers that passed him on the steps. He merely nodded to himself, lost in his own thoughts. He barely registered the beeping of their door as the room's maglock opened, or the swift clicking home of the deadbolt from the inside that sounded as soon as the door closed. He almost missed the click of another lock, and the barely audible sound of hustling footsteps headed away from him toward the back staircase. He lifted his eyes, expecting to see another pair of fucking squares fleeing the scene of their painfully ordinary sexual escapade, only to have his breath catch in his throat. Lily was double-timing it to the back stairs. She followed a man who wasn't Glide. A cold chill danced down his spine. He jumped up and ran to the door of 2C. It was unlocked, so he slipped in and immediately stopped. He heard Matt in the bathroom, tunelessly singing that goddamn Gary Gass song he always butchered when he thought no one was listening. Frowning, Talisman silently closed the door, sat on the bed, and waited for his brother. He began a calming mantra, the one he liked to use to keep himself from putting a bolt of lightning up Glide's ass. His meditation was interrupted by his brother's voice, not coming from the bathroom, but from the group comm channel.
I've just gleaned some new information. I need you to check on something for me.
New information.
Yeah, I have it on good authority that there's going to be a helicopter land on the mountaintop. That's our exit strategy.
All right, what do you want me to check out? Just that the helicopter's coming?
Verify that it's coming, what it is, how many passengers it can hold, what the cargo might be, who the passengers are, etc.
I'll look into it.
The door to the bathroom opened, and Glide stepped out, shirtless, rubbing a coarse towel between his hands. He looked at Talisman, perplexed.
What are you doing up here?
I saw Lily coming this way. I thought I would hopefully catch a peek of her, but I hope I'm wrong here. But I saw her leaving.
Okay.
Going the back way. I swear it's with that guy that stabbed you.
All right, hold on. Sit down. I'm going to shut the door.
I am sitting down.
Okay, I'm going to tell you something, but you can't tell anybody else. Okay.
What is it?
You know, I said I had a guy on the inside, right?
Right.
Well, the guy I had on the inside is Apex.
The guy who stabbed you.
Okay, I just tried to explain this to Lily. Now,
I want you to...
God forbid, I'm worried about the guy who stabbed you.
I know. I just want you to think
back. Screwed up the whole job.
I know. I just want you to think for a second. Be logical, okay? Let me start by saying, Apex and I found out before the Humanist job that we were all being set up.
Talisman glared at his brother. As Matt spoke, there was a glimmer of light that caught his attention. He focused his awareness on it and saw Rune floating up beside him. The spirit began waving his hand in Talisman's face, demanding his attention.
Apex and I found out...
Hold on a second.
What?
Rune, what's up?
I'm going to actually proceed.
Instead of sitting here and listening to your brother lie to you, again...
Am I lying?
Are your lips moving?
I'm not lying, I'm telling the truth.
I finished scouting the mountain. For the record, asking me to risk my ass and probe the astral defenses of a great dragon's secret vault isn't a very best friend thing to do. Anyway, I found something you need to see. Right now.
I'll be back.
Well, I'm not done explaining things.
I've heard enough anyway.
No, you haven't. You seriously have not heard enough. I've got to tell you more.
Hey, Glyde. Why don't you do what you do best?
Fuck off, Rune. I'm not lying.
Your aura is so muddled. Who could tell? Hell, at this point, I honestly don't know if you even understand the difference between a lie and the truth anymore.
I'll fuck your shit up right now, Rune. You just watch it. Go on, get out of here. Go do what you're going to do.
I'm out of here.
Don't do anything to Apex. Leave him alone.
So he is here, yes.
Yes, he is. Right. But I have to explain further. Let's go. I grab his body.
Weightlessness thrilled him as he rose above his slowly slumping body. He watched Glyde ease him into a resting position on the bed, sitting protectively beside him. Marcus allowed his consciousness to take over and project his astral body out of the building, Rune keeping pace as they flashed toward the mountain's peak. The ally spirit looked at him as they slowed their approach.
Did he just say Apex?
He did.
Oh man, you've got to be kidding me. Whatever. So, I found a weak point. Leads into the heart of the mountain. I can get you inside.
All right.
Okay, but it's important you stay with me. Do not deviate from the path. Got it?
All right, let's go.
Almost instantly, they plunged into a barely perceptible fissure in the side of the mountain. He stayed as close to his spirit partner as he could, descending deeper and deeper into the dark. The smothering black was intimidating, but his proximity to Rune bolstered his resolve. Then, suddenly, they were no longer zipping through the darkness, but hovering in the soft glow of pure mana. Talisman felt a surge as the raw magic of a ley line coursed below him. The conduit pulsed with a warmth that washed over him in waves. He looked to Rune, but his ally spirit was traveling away from him, following the ley line towards a more intense glowing in the distance. He quickly trailed his friend and then stopped in amazement. Light coalesced around him like vapor. The mana was so strong. He had to focus not to lose himself to it. It was seductive, magnetic. He was vaguely aware of his ally spirit pointing at something below them. A strange structure made of a completely alien material that seemed to cradle the ley line. Correction, ley lines. A mana crossroads. One of the most powerful phenomena in the hidden world. And around it, someone or something had erected a bizarre, semi-translucent latticework edifice. A housing cradling the pulsing loci at the point of intersection. Rune turned to look at him, a wide grin on his face.
A convergence of fragging ley lines, man. No wonder has to be settled here.
I've never seen anything like it.
This framework, this device around the convergence, it's ancient, man.
What do you make of the whole thing?
Possibly Theron.
How many people do you think know this is here?
Besides you and me? Has to be. I don't like the looks of this thing. As delicate as it is... Where it is.
Use your magical theory.
I have... That is 7 dice. 4. Not so good. I'm going to go ahead and edge it, though. That is 4 successes. Keep 4. And a +2 if it's involving a pattern recognition.
Yes. So that's okay. +2 dice.
Still only keep 4.
Use an edge. Your limits go
away.
Well,
then it's a 5. Yeah, I see that. It's like a mana mainline. This is big-time stuff. It's any little pressure on it could... make this whole place blow.
Exactly. That's its purpose, man. When it breaks, it'll force Mount Shasta to erupt.
That's gonna kill everybody around here.
More than that, You really are lost without me. Look, it's designed to redirect the mana flow of both ley lines, which would magnify the force of the eruption by about 1,000 times, turning Shasta into a world killer. There's more. This thing is astrally linked to something. Come on, I'll show you.
It gets better, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Not worse?
No, you idiot. It's worse.
I knew it.
Where we're going, we can't stay there very long.
They streaked upwards, along the barely visible astral link. As he slipped beside it, Talisman marveled at the tightly wound astral tendril making up the anchoring line. It was so old. They passed through a miniature opening in the rock and entered the far end of a large work cavern. His gaze was drawn to a point near the opposite end, an enormous golden torus hovering above a steel platform, the Indominel. He could feel its draw on him. The only thing that stopped him from approaching it was Rune. His friend crossed his path, demanding his attention. Talisman looked away from the ancient gateway to where Rune was pointing.
Hurry up, take it in, and let's get the hell out of here.
Below the Indominel was the unmistakable, hulking form of a dragon. But there was something wrong. Though he clearly saw the rise and fall of the great creature's breast with each respiration, it wasn't alive. Where he should have seen the awesome glow of its spiritual essence, there was nothing. Void. Marcus stared in awe. The creature was filled with so much technology. It was an abomination. The absolute perversity of the spectacle made him reel. He turned away and looked at Rune.
We need to go. Now.
Yeah, I don't know why you brought me here.
Marcus, there's no way this ends well. But we can choose how it ends. If those things, the horrors, come through, and one possesses the body of a cybered-out dragon, it means hell on Earth. Forever. If it comes to it, I'll post up at the Convergence. Say the word, and we end it all.
Talisman nodded, and at the speed of thought, his astral self streaked back to his meat body. As he hovered above the bed, he looked at his brother. It took him a moment to realize what Matt was doing. He held a small black plastic tube and was meticulously applying gooey red tint to Talisman's lips as he slept. Talisman dropped into his body and opened his eyes, noting Glyde's sly smirk.
Hey, this isn't my shade of lipstick, by the way.
I think it looks good on you. So what'd you see? What was the big deal?
Well, I found what we're here for. You know, no big deal.
What? You mean the gate?
The gate? Found it? Yeah.
Cool. All right.
So yeah, it's real cool. In front of it is a not quite alive, perhaps cybered out dragon.
What? Is that even possible?
I didn't think it was until 3 seconds ago.
What do you mean by like cybered out? You mean like he's got like a cyber limb?
Well, I didn't sit around and chat with him.
Well, you didn't see it, did he?
Well, he kind of reacted, but not really. I don't think he saw me. Doesn't matter.
How the fuck did you do that?
Well, I don't know. How do you bang all the hot chicks? And I have to,
I'm good looking.
Well, I'm special too.
Glyde shrugged as he capped the lipstick and placed the tube gently on the nightstand. He turned and looked at Talisman.
So I started to tell you.
Oh, we're just going to glaze over this giant dragon. Anyway, all right, well, tell me.
Well, I just have to imagine what you just told me.
Just go.
Okay, so Apex, like a ninja, right? I got Tommy on my shoulder, who's, you know, who's pretty fucked up after that attack, right?
Yeah, I remember. I'll never forget.
Apex has the drop on me while I'm holding our brother on my shoulder. He stabs me one time, only one time, and I survive. And what's that tell you?
He was in a hurry.
No, it was a setup. We did that on purpose to ingratiate him with Seder Crew so he could get in on the inside. We've been working this op for 10 years. I haven't said anything to anybody to protect you guys, to protect Apex while he's on the inside. So he can get the information that we need to get at the guy we need to get to.
Gosh, big brother, you're the best.
Thanks.
Protecting me and everything.
Are you being sarcastic?
No.
I think you're being sarcastic.
A little bit.
Okay. But we're going to get to Hans Brockhaus tonight. There's a helicopter coming. Okay. That's where Lily's going. Apex got her access. She's posing as...
You sent Lily away with Apex.
Yeah.
That's a good move.
Again, Apex and I are like this.
Glyde held up his hand and pointed his crossed fingers in Talisman's face.
I thought we were like that, but you have secrets with him that you don't have with me.
I was just trying to protect you, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. Why does anybody gotta be like that?
I don't need your protection.
I just sat here and washed your meat body while you went away.
Super job.
I just put some lipstick on you, that's all.
It's not even my shade.
Make a perception check, hearing based.
So, 8 dice. 3 successes, Eric.
So as you're talking, you realize you're not hearing security comm chatter anymore.
Oh, fuck. I'll switch channels.
Nothing.
What's going on?
I'm not hearing any comm chatter. We need to get downstairs.
Let me ask you a question real quick. I assume I'm not supposed to tell anybody this great decade-long...
Well, fuck no. How you reacted to it? How you think these assholes are going to react to it?
I think...
Probably fucking kill me right now. Exactly. Do you want to see your brother die right now?
No.
You're supposed to say no.
Hold on. No.
Okay, let's just try and keep a lid on it, okay? We're almost done. It's 10 years. This thing's almost finished.
It's 10 years for you. Let's go.
We're going to get Hans Brockhaus tonight, bro.
Can't wait to get Hans Brockhaus.
Fuck that guy.
He's a fuckable guy, yes.
He is?
I meant killing.
Oh, I don't know what you're into. Fuck.
The frigid wind gusted, blowing Lily's thick, double-breasted white greatcoat open at the waist. Instinctively, one arm pressed down to keep it from flapping, while her other hand kept a tight grip on her visored hat. With the recent snow, the only place to walk was right down the middle of the road, where vehicles had carved ruts in various depths. She looked over at Apex and frowned. He was one of those annoying people who seemed completely comfortable regardless of the climate. He wore a similar greatcoat to hers, with one exception. It bore no insignias or rank markings. Completely bare. Beneath it, he wore plain black fatigues that made him stand out in the white environment. But she knew him well enough. Under everything, he wore a custom, form-fitted chameleon suit. If it really came down to it, he could vanish. Probably better than she could. She watched him walking next to her and opened her mouth to talk, but words escaped her. They trudged uphill towards the well-lit monorail station. Part of what made the mountain fortress above them so impregnable was that the monorail served as the only ground access. She shook her head as she thought about the original plan and how much time they'd wasted in its preparation. Abruptly, she stopped. As if anticipating her action, Apex turned and looked at her. His eyes were cold, as they always were. She once joked with Glyde that Apex was the only person who she honestly couldn't read. Hell, she'd even tried to seduce him once. That didn't go so well. He'd nearly broken her neck. Apex Black, mercenary cleaner, tier ghost. He was as close to the perfect killer as you could get. And now she stood, staring at him, eye to eye, refusing to move. Despite the cold, she felt sweat trickle down her back as she noticed his hand shift slightly to the daisho in his belt. He squinted in irritation, but said nothing.
You've got to know how hard this is for me. You're the last person I expected to see when I walked in that room. And I must be out of my mind for agreeing to come with you. What am I doing here?
His head rose and fell in a single nod, as if he understood some hidden meaning in her words.
It has to be this way. The plan, this whole thing, depends on you being able to do what needs to be done, without the others weighing you down.
What's that supposed to mean?
We really don't have time for this right now.
Damn it, Apex! I've spent 10 years hating you. You can't expect me to turn it off just because Glyde says I can trust you.
Look, personally, I don't give a fuck. You can go stick your head back in the fucking sand. You have no clue how hard it was to get this far. Almost to the end, and now you start asking why? Fuck, Lily. You either follow me now, or you don't. Stop wasting my time.
You're such an asshole.
They stared at each other for what seemed an eternity, until Lily shook her head and shrugged.
One question, then we go on.
Fine.
Glyde said you knew Tommy was involved. What does that mean?
He was talking about the Humanist job. Tailgunner got mixed up with former members of Ex-Pakis.
Sabanjour.
Apex's eyes widened momentarily, and he almost smiled. If she didn't know him any better, she would almost say he looked impressed.
They were the ones who really hired us, to put a stop to Kobe's experiments. Not because of the inhuman shit that was going on, but because Kobe was beating them to their own goal, opening the gate.
Lily stood there for a while, slowly processing what Apex was telling her. Why the hell would the Sabanjur hire them 10 years ago? And then it fell into place.
Kenzo Kidora.
Exactly. The Yaks protecting Kobe, they were his. Kidora was always loyal to Lofir, even after he was gifted to Hestabee.
Kidora was an expert on the Indomino.
And how exactly does that happen? How does someone become an expert on a device so old that dragons don't know how to operate it?
She opened her mouth to reply, but the look in his eyes told her that the question was rhetorical. He motioned towards the monorail station, as if telling her that the Q&A was over. With a sigh, she resumed walking up the hill. The oversized, fluffy foot of Professor Fuzzybum tap, tap, tapped on the floor beside Nightfall as she analyzed the data he'd just provided for her. He pulled his pocket watch out of his tweed waistcoat by a glittering golden chain, turning his wrist as if to show her the time, indicating that he had some important schedule to keep. As she read the information, she stuck her tongue out at him. He was always such an impatient, grumpy pants. She smiled at him and nodded, silently giving her consent for him to return to the residence. He pursed his lips and wiggled his whiskers in smug satisfaction, executed a stiff bow, and faded away. Nightfall blinked as she transitioned from VR, willing herself to ignore how ugly everything was in the meat world. It was then that she noticed that she was alone at the table. She stood and joined Fastback, Frenzy, and Blockade at their table, smiling as she pointed to where, just moments ago, her sprite stood.
So, guys, we have an exit strategy. Supposedly, the couple were able to get information about a helicopter. It's a stealth job. He couldn't get me any information on who was in there.
Fastback fidgeted slightly in his seat. She could see the irritation that he was trying to hide. Her eyes moved to the staircase that led to the rooms above, where Lily had followed Glide. Fastback always said that the reason he preferred machines was that they always did what was expected of them. You treated a machine well, there were no surprises. She watched with amusement as he stared into his empty coffee cup, a distant look in his eyes.
I go to the bar, I refresh my coffee, then I walk back, and I have two, and I bring Nightfall a cup of coffee and one for Frenzy also.
Everybody make a perception check.
Perception check. Three.
Nightfall looked at Fastback, who stood stock still, absently holding the forgotten coffee cups in his hands, staring into space. Confused, she looked at Frenzy, ready to deliver a quick barb to lighten the mood, only to see that the mage was also staring in the same direction. Just then, it occurred to her that the room had grown completely silent. No clinking forks on plates, no chatter, nothing. Slowly, she turned her head in the direction that her teammates were staring. Every person at every table sat straight backed in their chairs. It was as if the off-duty security officers were instantly replaced by wooden mannequins. The only person who moved was a white-coated officer in the back of the room who looked directly at them. He was silently enunciating words into a sub-vocal mic.
6 o'clock.
Blockade, security comm goes dead.
The security just went quiet.
Nightfall heard a slight chuckle from the open doorway that led to the main reception area. She shifted her weight and looked right at War Chief. The Decker was garbed in the same clothes Nightfall had last seen her in, doeskin pants and vest over a white shirt. The only exception was she now wore an oversized, puffy green winter coat. It totally clashed with her Native American theme. It made her look ridiculous. War Chief sneered at her, nodding her head slowly, making the beaded feathers in her blonde hair dance.
I'll smile at her. We've got more than one friend here.
We have incoming at 6 o'clock and 4 o'clock. Everyone be on your guard.
Nightfall's head snapped around as Fastback quickly hissed a curse. Coming out of the men's room was the unmistakable form of Big Game. Underneath his open hunter's vest, the muscles of his naked chest and abdomen quivered in perverse delight as he stared at her.
I'm in that. 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, midnight.
It's about to get hairy in here.
They're not going to make a move with this many people in here. Neither should we.
Should we step out in the street? I will stay here at the table, keep an eye on them. You guys dine and dash.
I can't leave Lily behind.
The tension of the moment was broken by the sound of the front door being thrust open. Nightfall watched as a man in a white greatcoat and visored hat of an SK Prime commander entered the dining room. He removed his hat and ran a gloved hand over his shaved head before motioning to the two trolls who stood behind him. The heavily armored brutes flanked the hawk-faced officer and leveled their heavy barrel assault cannons directly at Blockade. The sudden, unexpected shuffling of chairs all around her made her jump. She stared in horror as every one of the stiff security guards rose and turned to face her table. The detached, glazed look in their eyes made her skin crawl.
This ain't good. We gotta go.
The bald officer smiled slightly at them and then slowly replaced his hat.
You were all under arrest.
My shift ain't even up yet. What'd I do?
Please, desist with all attempts at deception. We were alerted to your presence. Your charade is over. This ends one of two ways. You come with us, or you die.
Man, poison sold us out.
No.
Nightfall froze as an AR window opened in her line of sight. She glared at Warchief, who blew her a kiss. The Technomancer turned her complete attention to the data that was scrolling past and grit her teeth in anger. Intel files detailing every aspect of her life rolled across her vision. Aliases, contacts, everything. From the reaction of her teammates, they were experiencing the same thing. Seder Krupp had to have been gathering it all for years. The question of how stuck in her mind. And then, a more important question occurred to her. Why?
What are we doing? Breaking for it or are we going to surrender?
Let's play along and see where this goes.
All right.
I stand up.
All right, let's go.
As one, the guards turned, forming a path that ran down the center of the dining room, leading to the front door. The stone-faced SK Prime commander executed a crisp about-face and strode out, while the massive trolls prodded her and her friends into following. Nightfall heard the footsteps behind her as the soldiers fell into step.
Let's get out of here. This is a death box.
The monorail eased to a stop at the mountaintop platform. The doors quietly slid open, and Lily followed Apex up the paved walkway toward the arched gate of the Titanic Fortress. Scaffolding lined the nearest wall, where the reconstruction efforts were in full effect. The reflective face masks of the black-garbed guards never moved as they passed. She spotted black domes of security sensors mounted on light poles, as well as dotting the walls of the complex. Her unease was hidden by a well-practiced mask of indifference as she took note of every detail that she could. Apex strode with the confidence of someone totally comfortable with their surroundings. As they walked past, she noticed the fear and awe that crossed the faces of the general staff. No one accosted them. Most didn't even look at them. Apex had cultured his mystique very well. He led her up a spiraling staircase and soon stopped in front of a thick wooden door midway down a short hallway. He turned the latch and shifted to the side so she could enter.
This is your room. Get changed. I'll wait out here.
Lily stepped inside, the motion-activated lights turning on as she closed the door behind her. The room was Spartan. On the bed was a smart, stylish skirt suit. She whistled through her teeth, impressed. It was this season's Zoe, fully loaded, custom. Expensive. She changed quickly, securing her predator in the concealed holster at the small of her back. She checked herself in the room's mirror and then stepped out to join Apex. He nodded with approval. Then, with practiced ease, they strode down the stairs and across the large hallway into a high-ceilinged room with banks of monitors lining one wall,
manned by dozens of technicians wearing black coveralls. On the central, main screen, a video feed labeled Vault 4 showed two men working on a massive brass vat. Lily stopped. She knew what it was. She'd seen it before. She didn't have to guess what was inside. Something about the two men working on the machine seemed strange to her. She couldn't place it. She was about to comment to Apex when she felt his hand close on her wrist, pulling her. His eyes burned with irritation. She nodded and continued following him. They went through a door just off the main operations area and stood on a balcony overlooking a massive meeting room. They descended the stairs, Lily taking note of the men sitting at the large wooden meeting table, as well as the black fatigued security guards lining the walls. As they approached, one of the men at the table stood, while the other slumped forward, resting his face in his hands. The standing man looked at her with intense, gold-colored eyes. His long white hair was pulled back off his neck in a man bun. Tendrils of loose hair undulated as he watched them approach. Though the man looked human, something about him suggested otherwise. He had power, a magnetism that was undeniable. She briefly regarded the slumped man. His apple-red hair was spiked in a seemingly random fashion. They were adorned with golden beads that were woven into the tips. He wore a red leather jacket that hung loosely about his shoulders, exposing a red and black checkered vest. The man's face was hidden from her, buried in his blood-soaked hands. She nodded. She turned her eyes from the beaten wretch and looked back at the tormentor. The man she came all this way to see, to kill, Hans Brockhaus.
Herr Black, where is this?
Mr. Brockhaus, this is Miss Romero. I was instructed to escort her directly to you when she arrived.
The white-haired man coolly regarded her for a long while before nodding and looking back at Apex.
I see. Very good. You can stay, Herr Black. You should be here to see the result of all your hard work. And please, dispense with the charade. No need to call me Brockhaus here.
Thank you, sir.
Fraulein, you may begin recording. Time stamped and labeled. Grunesblatt.
Lily's eyes narrowed, and she looked at the form slumped on the table. Brockhaus lovingly placed a thick hand on the top of the man's head, smashing several of the red spikes.
Shall we end this, mein Freund? You must have known it would come to this.
Harlequin looks up, and it's not Harlequin. It's your dad.
Motherfucker!
Shit just got real.
Make a composure roll.
Okay, 12 dice. All right. I got 6 successes.
Stone-faced. Now I need to roll his composure.
Aw, shit.
He looks up. His eyes widen.
Oh, no. Lelandriel, no. You're not supposed to be here.
Aw, shit.
Glide rapidly tapped the earpiece, then looked at Talisman, shaking his head.
Yeah, I got no comm chatter. We gotta get downstairs.
As quickly as possible, without arousing suspicion, the brothers hustled down the hall, taking the back stairwell. The main stairs would have left them too exposed. No sense in being seen. They didn't have to be. When they reached the bottom, Glide peered around a corner to get a view of the reception area. Through the glass of the front door, he swore he saw the form of the big bounty hunter from the Amaniel job. Big game. He motioned for Marcus to follow him as he rushed through the front and into the empty dining room. It was spooky, as if everyone in the room had abruptly left, vanished. Glide looked to the tables where he and his friends had been. They weren't there, but their gear was. Blockade's assault cannon. Fastback's drone pack.
That's not right.
Holy shit, dude, this is bad.
This is really bad.
As casually as they could muster, they stepped out of the front door and instantly saw the tall Asian bounty hunter running up the hill towards the monorail station, where a large crowd of security officers were watching Blockade and the others as they were led into one of the cars.
Are any other construction workers getting on the train?
No.
This is where we gotta do the Chewbacca thing, and you say, I got this.
Here, put these on.
Well, not for me.
These are flexi-cuffs. Go ahead, put them on. It's cool. And I want you to be drunk.
Yeah, I can. Okay. I can play a drunk detective.
I'll grab him by the collar and kind of drag him along. Go towards the train station. Punch yourself a couple times.
Punch me. Come on, punch me.
They reach the station just in time to see the train pulling away. Its red lights quickly fading into the dark. Glide stopped and looked at Talisman.
Fuck. The fuck do we do now?
His brother was standing there, staring at a point in space. He knew what that meant. Marcus was setting Rune on a task. Matt opened his awareness to the hidden world and saw the shimmering form of his brother's ally spirit streaking away, directly above the accelerating train. As they continued their approach to the station, one of the remaining guards turned and nodded to them.
Can I help you, sir?
When's the next train?
That was a command-authorized override, sir. It'll immediately return once it drops off the package.
Hey, I didn't do anything wrong.
Shut the fuck up or I'm going to hit you again.
Both of you roll con.
Do I have a baseline I can roll for con?
It's charisma at a minus two.
So that's one. Oh, I didn't fail.
Five, Eric.
Talisman gets
zero successes.
You want me to take care of him, sir? Teach him some manners?
I want him in perfect condition when he gets up there, just so they've got that much further to take him down.
The guard stared at Talisman, and then quickly glanced at Glide, before shaking his head in genuine confusion.
Pardon me, sir, but I thought they only put metahumans in the vaults.
Looks human, doesn't he?
Oh, that's amazing. You can barely tell.
The astounded guard openly gawked in amazement at Talisman for several minutes as they waited for the train to return. When it did, he smiled at Glide and nodded as if they shared some great secret. Glide roughly shoved his brother into the monorail car, onto one of the molded plastic seats, and stood protectively over him until the train came to a stop at the top of the mountain. They stepped out and followed the path towards the gate when Rune suddenly appeared and impatiently pointed towards the large central building.
They went this way. I can sense frenzy from here, but we need to hurry. There's some mean-ass shit here, and I can't remain hidden from them all night.
I'll just kind of nudge Glide in the right direction.
I get it. I understand.
Sure, you do, moron.
Shut up.
They're in the fortress, in a warded room. Come on.
Lily stared at her father. It took every ounce of resolve in her to keep her mouth shut. She closed her eyes, hoping in vain that the man who stood merely inches from her, Brockhaus, didn't hear what her father had said. Slowly, she opened her eyes and turned. Brockhaus didn't react. He wasn't even looking at her. His attention was drawn to the far end of the room, where one of the thick chamber doors opened. She followed his gaze and whispered a curse. A large contingent of black-clad security officers, led by an SK Prime commander, filed in, escorting Fastback, Nightfall, Frenzy, and Blockade into the room. Two huge trolls ducked as they stepped through the doorway. Each one wore hardened security armor and carried a massive Panther XXL cannon. Lily saw the familiar faces of Warchief and Big Game. The runners entered and closed the door behind them. Lily looked at Fastback. He stared at her in confusion while the others were looking at Apex, hatred boiling in their eyes. Nightfall's face twisted in disgust as she spoke.
Fuck is he doing here?
The white-haired man smiled and held out his hands in a welcoming gesture as Lily's team were prodded forward.
Ah, at last. I was beginning to wonder how much longer I was going to be forced to wait.
As she silently watched, motion caught her attention. She began cycling through her vision settings and enhancing until she could make out the forms of two people hiding in a shadowy recess of a far balcony. Glide and Talisman. Matt nodded to her as he finished assembling her sniper rifle and began looking through the scope. She could tell who he was aiming at. Brockhaus. Lily couldn't restrain her grin.
I must say, Herr Black, I am impressed you were able to pull it off, getting them to come here willingly and uninjured. Masterfully done. I see that my trust was not misplaced.
Thank you, sir.
What the hell's going on here?
I am so very glad you asked. We are going to finish what was begun 10 years ago.
Damn.
This is about 10 years ago. I'm ready to finish.
Me too.
A darkened monitor on the opposite wall from where she stood instantly winked to life. On it, a beautiful auburn-haired woman. Her milky pale skin glowed with a radiance that took Lily's breath away. Her piercing green eyes regarded the room, then settled on Brockhaus. Hestaby smiled.
Goldmaster, I see that my gift has been presented. It is offered to you in reciprocation of the gesture shown to me in the beginning. Following the ancient precept, it is of flesh and blood.
Ah, Orange Queen, I am so disappointed. These are poor choices for such important pieces. Pity. I would have liked a bit of a challenge.
Before you render castigatory judgment, I ask that you scrutinize the one acting as your assistant. She is the daughter of Ammoniel.
All eyes turned to Lily. Goldmaster. Hestaby called Brockhaus Goldmaster. Lily closed her eyes and lowered her head. Of course. When she looked up, Goldmaster Loafweir stared at her, a look of surprise on his usually stoic face. He recovered quickly and looked down as if processing, analyzing the new data. Everyone turned back to the image of Hestaby. Well, not everyone. Lily could feel the eyes of her father on her. She shifted her gaze to him. The look of sadness on his face was slowly replaced by cold realization.
I knew she'd do it. I knew she'd send you, though I'd hoped she wouldn't.
Intensity grew in her father's eyes as he leaned forward towards her.
Wake up, Lilandriel.
Lily blinked and looked over at Nightfall, who was sneering at Loafweir.
What do you mean? What do you have to finish?
Loafweir tilted his head and slowly shook it, amusement clearly painted on his face.
The rules of the great game are far too complex for the likes of you, I'm afraid. Let's just say that Milady has made a bold move. A rare opening. Now, I must consider my response.
No one moved. Nightfall defiantly crossed her arms.
What do you need us for?
Oh, I don't. Most of you will serve as fuel.
Loafer's words hung in the air, giving their meaning a terrible weight. Everyone stared at him, even as Hestaby spoke.
The blood I give is yours. The flesh is yours. As it was entrusted to me, it is returned in earnest.
A fine sacrifice.
Lily stood there, unable to move. What did that mean? His blood. His flesh. She barely registered a hand on her arm. She looked down, following the hand and arm to look again into her father's face.
Open your eyes, girl. Listen to what is happening.
The room began to spin. She felt as if she were going to pass out. What was happening? The voice of Hestaby sounded muffled to her ears.
The move is yours, Goldmaster. I eagerly await it.
Someone was shaking her. Her father. Cascade Greenleaf. Her father. Her name was Lilandriel. Lilandriel Greenleaf. Her mother was Ammoniel. The dragon's daughter. She wanted to throw up.
Do you know? Do you understand?
Her vision faded. Her father's voice ringing in her ears.
What is more likely, Lilandriel? That you are the unwitting pawn of your wicked witch mother? Your grandmother? A dragon of unspeakable power? And her ancient rival? Or that you are a frightened little girl who let her feelings get in the way, blew a mission, and got herself and her friends captured, locked in a perpetual hallucination, the subject of a madman's foul experiments. Wake up, Lily. Wake up. Wake up.
I wake up! In one split second, my world shatters. 1,000 glittering pieces. I can't tell what's real. I try and hold on to anything I can. The blue of my father's eyes. The sound of exploding gunfire around me. The smell of blood.
What's happening?
We never got out 10 years ago.
We've been there the whole time.
Oh my God.
I open my mouth to scream as the shards of my reality dissipate into the darkness of oblivion. But nothing comes out. No sound. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I'm drowning. I try and tell myself that it's not real. And then, cold. 1,000 icy needles stab into my flesh. Shock forces liquid from my lungs, replaced with air. My eyes open, and through the filmy haze, I see the face of Apex Black. He's so young. Is this real? Or a memory?
Wake up, Lily.
God damn it, Apex. We're losing her.
Shut the fuck up and let me think.
It's not an easy thing to find out that reality is illusion. Life is a dream. The question is, whose dream is it? When you figure that out, you've reached the end. Only to find out that what you think is the end is really the beginning.
Thank you for listening. We hope you have enjoyed the Dragon Variation. Theme music by Dot Sound. Background music by Machinima Sound. Written, produced, and directed by Eric Osler. Openly Gamer Theater would like to thank Catalyst Game Labs for allowing us to make this production. Any commercial use of this production is prohibited. Shadowrun is copyrighted property of the Topps Company. Openly Gamer Theater is trademark property of Side Tangent Productions.